Hello and welcome to Radio Edutalk. This is David Noble, and I'm delighted to welcome to the show Dr. Zoe Robertson of the GTCS. Welcome to the show, Zoe.
Hello, David.
Okay. And many listeners will have come across you and your writing and your work with the GTC and previously with Edinburgh University, but might not be too aware of what your present role is, or maybe roles. So could you just kind of briefly, first of all, give us a bit more about your background in education and research, and then about your present roles within the GTC?
Certainly. Well, my background in education, I started off as a primary teacher in Fife, then moved to America to teach over there for a couple of years, which was a fantastic experience, and probably one of my early engagements with research in a more practice-based context. When I returned from teaching in America, I taught again in Fife while studying for my Master's in Education. And then after that, that's when I moved into Edinburgh University as a lecturer there and developed a strong interest and involvement in Charter Teacher as well as the undergraduate programmes there. And so thinking about teacher engagement with research has been a core part of my work for over 10 years now, in terms of moving from Charter Teacher through to where we are now. After working at Edinburgh University for a number of years, I had a brief time on secondment at Education Scotland working the teacher education team there before taking up my post here, firstly as an education advisor for research and professional learning, and most recently I'm the acting head of educational services here. So my remit is quite broad, spanning a range of our educational areas of involvement. So professional update is a core part of our work at the moment, looking at professional learning more broadly, the use and development of the standards, the teacher induction scheme, probation all sits within educational services, to name but a few things. Professional recognition, obviously another key important part in terms of professional learning. But there are a host of other things that I won't bore you all with just now.
And we have some English listeners and listeners abroad, and maybe new entrants to the profession here in Scotland. So you're using terms like professional recognition, professional update. Can you just put that in the context of first of all, what they are and how they sit within the milieu of Scottish education?
Absolutely. Well, Professional Update is our biggest initiative at the moment that was launched for all teachers in Scotland, all registered teachers in Scotland, from August 2014. It actually became a requirement for teachers to engage in Professional Update. Where that has come from is stemmed from a number of developments in Scottish education. Most notably, we have Teaching Scotland's Future, which has informed a huge number of developments across the board in recent years. But Professional Update itself initially came in part from that, but also back in 2012, General Teaching Council became fully independent, going back to the 2011 reform, public reform order, which granted GTC independence from the government, but part of that included the requirement for the General Teaching Council to set up some sort of system of professional reaccreditation. And quickly, General Teaching Council started to work on that and look at what that might involve, and moved immediately away from this term of reaccreditation and started looking at Professional Update and focusing more on the professional learning and development aspect of it rather than some sort of revalidation, which it could initially have been interpreted as. So that's been the brief history of where Professional Update has come from. We went through a two-year pilot phase developing Professional Update, ready to implement it for all in 2014, and we're now entering into this first year of it becoming embedded as part of practice across Scotland. Professional recognition, you were asking about there, was introduced a few years ago now in General Teaching Council, and is an award that is given to an individual to recognise enhanced, sustained professional learning in a significant area of developing expertise or accomplishment. So it's taking on what you might expect to be the norm for a teacher and actually really developing that significant expertise in a particular area, such as assessment, for example, and professional recognition being that award from the General Teaching Council as your professional body, yeah. To recognise that expertise.
Okay, and I'll just say at this point that this is a pre-recorded show, but if you're listening to this going out on a Tuesday evening or to the podcast, you can still get in touch with the show and with Zoe in two ways. You can email edutalkr, that's edutalkr @hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter, you can pop something up and include the hashtag edutalk, edutalk. So Zoe, this all again fits in with the Teaching Scotland's Future, the so-called Donaldson Agenda, and this move towards a notion, an actual maybe step change in practice in Scotland of career long professional learning. Now, what kind of teacher are we looking to create over their career? What kind of attributes and qualities? I know this, a lot of this will be contained in the relatively new standard for career long professional learning, but can we just tease out, you know, what it is that we're actually trying to, the system and the individuals within the system are trying to create in the teachers that work with our young people?
Absolutely. Well, it's a very big question and I'll try and give a brief answer. The simplest answer I can give that we see across and embedded across all the standards is this whole notion of developing as an inquiring profession and being an inquiring professional. So in a nutshell, that's probably the biggest change. We've moved through various phases. We can reflect back and we've had the focus on being the reflective practitioner based on Donald Schoen's work, etc. And it's just part of that evolving shift of where we are now as a profession. So taking that as the nub of where we're at and what this means to be an inquiring professional, what does that actually look like for me as a classroom teacher? What does it look like for me as head of educational services at GTC? What does that look like? It's something that is relevant to all because it's embedded across the standards. And we can see it set within the standards in different ways. One, sitting within the professional values, and I think that's really important because we have the same values that sit across all three standards, regardless of what your role or post is within education. Those values still apply. So we're looking at things like the value of integrity and really unpicking that, looking at this commitment to critically examining who you are as a teacher, what that means, what your beliefs and assumptions are and how that relates in your practice. So asking deep searching questions about who you are as a teacher, what that actually means, I think is a really important part of our values and something that's embedded throughout. Also sitting in there is that commitment to lifelong inquiry. And so we're saying we're not a complacent profession. We're actually looking and always thinking about what it is that we're doing and why we are doing that. Now, some of that is not new, has been there and developing in the system for a long time. But I think it's really important that at this time, what we're talking about in terms of what it means to be an inquiring professional, we're being quite clear about that. And it is a shift in terms of the way we engage in our practice. For some, that shift will be very small because it's the way that they've been engaging for a long time. For others, there will be a greater shift and a slower change in terms of what that practice might look like. In terms of taking that across the rest of the standard, you were mentioning the standard for career long professional learning. And sitting within that, there are some very explicit references to inquiry and research and something that one is expected to have knowledge about. And that works in two ways. One, having knowledge about the research that is out there that is informing developments in education that might inform your practice, whether that is assessment strategies or whether it's something to do with people behaviour and motivation. What is the research that's informing what we're doing? But also about one's own skills and having this disposition towards asking those questions and inquiring into what's happening either in your own classroom, in your practice, or more broadly thinking about, well, why is somebody telling me that this is the best way to do something? Why does this supposedly work? And so it's actually having that critical disposition and having the skills to be able to inform and challenge and question and think about practice at those different levels.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, very kind of heavy, deep areas of development. I was very fortunate, as you know, to go through one particular route within the Charter Teacher Programme. These opportunities still exist, obviously, for master's level and master's professional learning, but within an authority or school context, what opportunities ought there be, or have you seen there to exist for individuals or groups of teachers to reflect and to inquire?
I think there has been a really encouraging shift across the board in terms of how opportunities are developing and how this is becoming embedded. And you're absolutely right, David, if we look back 10 years, even 5 years ago, the focus was on the master's level courses for Chartered Teacher and where these specific skills were developed and recognised, but they weren't part of the kind of mainstream approach. And it is a challenge in trying to develop some of these skills because it's not what was necessarily part of our initial teacher education years ago. But now I think we can see a change that these skills and these principles are embedded across initial teacher education. Across the country now, looking at the probationer support programmes run by local authorities, many of them, if not all, I can't say that all of them, but many of them that I know about all have embedded at the heart of them an inquiry approach. So the probationers are supported to inquire into practice about a particular aspect of their own professional learning and development. So that's one clear opportunity there. Obviously, those who are supporting probationers are working in that way and developing their own knowledge there as well. But we can also see significant provision across Scotland where local authorities are embedding this inquiry approach into the provision that they have or courses are being developed. But I think it's really important that we recognise it's not just about the courses and that's not where the biggest change will necessarily happen. It's about that kind of broader approach that we each take to what it is that we do and ensuring that there are appropriate professional learning opportunities to help develop those skills.
Mm-hmm. I know it's a phrase, well, I believe it's a phrase that's been used, see it crop up in Twitter quite often, and I believe that there's some quite prominent head teachers that have used the phrase onlineness. The idea, I might want to elaborate on it, Zoe, of the inquiring school. I'll be talking about the likes of learning rounds, small-scale practitioner research, engaging with some weighty, maybe international research as well within communities of practice, and that's just the ideas off the top of my head that I've read about and seen in practice. So you say a bit more maybe about such examples or give some other
examples. Absolutely. I think there are so many really strong examples out there that all work towards the same vision, if you like, of being the inquiring profession, the inquiring school. And learning rounds could be one really good example of that, where there is that focus on a particular issue, area, or aspect, and people are questioning it, bringing together their knowledge, sharing that knowledge, hopefully bringing in some criticality from reading and other research, and really taking that from their own context and questioning it within their own context, because that's where it's most meaningful. It's not about some bland external research that doesn't have relevance to the individual in the context. So absolutely, all of these things together, I don't think it can be a single approach. I think it's a myriad of approaches together. My only caution to these things, and it, as with anything, is ensuring that the conditions are right in the context to support people engaging in that way, to help develop the skills to enable them to engage as best as possible, and bringing in an element of that external knowledge, which can be done in different ways. So sometimes the cosy chats that can happen because we're working in very familiar context together don't present that same challenge. So for the likes of learning rounds, it's ensuring that you're bringing in that challenge to the knowledge and to the practice that's there, and asking those critical questions. So there are a number of different ways you can take that approach, and I think they all add equal value.
And we talk about a lot of work around PRD, for example, and the importance of the PRD conversations, at least somewhat linking into to a school improvement plan or a local authority improvement plan. So I'm just wondering, you know, where the would you be advocating that people should be engaging with research and inquiry for that kind of sole purpose as part of the bigger picture, or is there scope for individuals as professional teachers to actually engage in inquiry separately from the bigger picture within the school, or even just as an individual professional, maybe in an area that's got nothing to do at this present time with their work within a school?
I think the latter point you make there, David, would be quite a challenge if an individual teacher wished to engage in an inquiry or research project that was completely disconnected mm-hmm. from their own context. It would be really hard for them to do that. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest ways to make inquiry meaningful is that it's relevant to what you're doing. So if it wasn't relevant to your context, that would be more problematic. And certainly, I mean, I'll take one possible example. If you were studying on a master's course, for example, and you had a project that you needed to do as part of a module for assessment or whatever, and you were focusing that purely for the sake of doing this master's course, but it wasn't actually relevant to your professional context, to your professional practice, to the pupils or learners that you're working with, then there's a real unfortunate disconnect, mm-hmm. and that's not going to give you the most meaningful learning experience for yourself, and nor is it going to have the most impact in mm-hmm. your context. So I would advise against doing that, because teachers are exceptionally busy, and having to do two things that don't actually connect each other doesn't make that much sense
I'm just
context.
Wondering, from your experience, have you found that teachers are quite happy to negotiate with yourself, your previous roles, and possibly the line manager in the school to do something that does fit in with, for example, a school improvement plan? Or has it been your experience in the past that there's a degree of autonomy there for the professional to say, well, there is an issue within my class or classes that I've identified, it doesn't fit within anyone else's agenda, what have you, it's something that I would like to focus mm-hmm. on, and my line manager and yourself have given me blessing to explore that? Or does there tend to be a pressure more towards the school's priorities?
I think that's quite a difficult one, because it will depend entirely on individuals will have different experiences of that, and I'm sure there will be people who will feel that they wanted to explore something that was absolutely relevant in their classroom and were told they couldn't because it wasn't in the school improvement plan, or that was the perception of it. Likewise, there were people who have had a wonderful experience and everything negotiated nicely together, and that worked really well. Where I have come across more of that disconnect is if somebody, I mean, there are a number of different reasons. There needs to be a strong leadership culture in a school that will support an inquiry process, can understand the benefits of that, an approach to your school improvement plan that will enable people to engage in this space. So that there are a whole host of things that will relate in there. There's probably not that much that somebody would want to focus on that was a real genuine concern in a classroom that could be justified as a real genuine concern or area of interest to explore that wouldn't be relevant to a broader development within school. I mean, it may be that the school is focusing on literacy, for example, and an individual teacher wants to develop their numeracy skills mm-hmm. teaching. There's going to be these differences. But whatever is agreed as part of a school plan, a school improvement plan or whatever that it happens to be, should have relevance into the individual classroom as well. So there is a careful negotiation. We don't work in isolation. We don't work out with a broader context, so we can't ignore that context. Yeah. It would be quite wrong for me in my post to go and engage in an inquiry that had absolutely nothing to do with the value and aims of GTC and the context of the education sector. In the same vein, it wouldn't be helpful for the teacher, and it wouldn't necessarily be helpful for the pupils to engage in something that wasn't directly relevant and meaningful. Yeah. But there is a lot of careful negotiation that needs to go on there, and making sure that whatever the focus of inquiry is, it's absolutely relevant to the children in that classroom, mm-hmm. and it will have impact on them and or the teacher and their colleagues.
Yeah. We mentioned about obtaining kind of developing a kind of criticality in terms of your reading of research, and I'd imagine by extension kind of policy documents as well, and the whole idea of us becoming an inquiring profession. Now, the number of papers have come out from the GTC in recent years, and obviously we've had the development of a new suite of standards and such like, and we've talked about professional recognition and professional update. People are often a bit wary about online tools, but that's the way we're moving, and you know, the paper-based systems seem to be very much on the way out, and I know local authorities, some local authorities have got their own systems as well, but having had a look at the MyGTCS portal, if that's what we would call it, online over the festive break there, I was really impressed with how it's developed recently and some of the new tools and resources that are available. So maybe for the benefit of some listeners who are now within this whole development of professional update, you know, it's here and it started and we're all now engaging with it in whichever way. You know, can you say about, can you tell us about what the GTCS portal is, and tell us about some of the tools, and particularly I'd be interested to hear more about the EBSCO research literature resource.
Not a problem. Well, MyGTCS is a resource that is available for all registered teachers, free as part of being a registered teacher with the General Teaching Council. There are a number of different aspects to it. I'll focus on just two, because there's a whole area for probationers, but I won't go into that just now. So obviously within MyGTCS you have a space where you can go on and change and update your own details that are held on the register, from your basic contact details, employment details, your qualifications and so on. So
there's an obligation to do that now, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. As part of professional update, there's a requirement to check your details on an annual basis and update them if that's required, which people seem to be doing, which is very encouraging. And it's probably not on everyone's priority list that make sure you check your details every year. What I think is probably the biggest gap in the details that we have is people do tend to check, you know, if they've got married and changed their name or got a new qualification that they want to add in or a change of address. But just keeping an eye on making sure our employment details are up to date as well is a good thing to be doing there. So you have that basic area. Then for professional update, there's an entire section there. And within that section, at the moment, you have available the tools required to engage in the professional update process and for you to confirm your engagement in that process and for your line manager reviewer to confirm that. Sitting there is your professional learning record, your reflective journal and evidence library, and a space to record your PRD meetings and targets. So all of these features are there. It's actually something that we continue to look at and develop and evolve. And you may be aware that as part of the pilot phase of professional update, we've engaged in research and evaluation to understand how people are using MyGTCS as well as engaging in the process. So we're constantly using that feedback to help develop and evolve. So you will see further changes to MyGTCS as the year progresses. But really what we're trying to provide there is that opportunity to go in and record professional learning in a meaningful way. So it's looking at thinking about what has been the focus of my professional learning, what difference has that made to me, the so what factor, and that's something that you likely would revisit over time. So trying not to focus on I've counted how many hours I'm doing and I'm recording every single thing that I might do that's professional learning, but that kind of bigger look at it, what is it that I'm focusing on, why is that important to me? And what difference is it making? And so there's the evidence library there that you can upload different documents, examples of evidence, things that are important to you that show for you the impact your professional learning is having on you and your pupils, as well as the opportunity to have a reflective learning log there so you can go in, make those notes, think about it and consider it. And that's one approach to doing it. Some local authorities use MyGTCS for professional update, and some local authorities use their own system, usually their own system for PRD. Mostly local authorities either use MyGTCS or Gateway or SOPRA for their recording process and for their PRD. Gateway and SOPRA have similar facilities and features to what my GTCS offers. And obviously as part of the validation process for professional update, that was something that we looked at to ensure that the processes there enabled people to reflect and record their professional learning in a way that would allow them to engage with professional update. So there's that part of the My GTCS. And the other part you mentioned there was the new access to EBSCO resources. This was something that we launched in August of 2014. And going back to what we're talking about research and engagement and inquiry, it is something that's an important focus. It's something that we are promoting. And at the GTCS, we're really keen to support and promote teachers' engagement with and in research. And it's not all about having to do an inquiry project every term or every year. It's about that stance. It's about having that inquiring disposition. But in order to do that, you need access.
Yeah.
And if you don't have access to research, it makes it quite difficult to engage. And this has long been a problem in education, that teachers have been keen, they've been interested, they've wanted to engage in research, but unless you're enrolled onto a master's programme or something similar in university, getting access to current research is a challenge. So as part of our commitment to supporting and promoting teacher engagement, we have provided access through EBSCO for all our registered teachers to a selection of journals and e-books. So what's available, we have selected 28 e-books. We will increase that library, but at the moment we have 28 e-books that are cross-referenced in relation to core themes within the professional standards.
Right.
So, for example, we have social justice, learning for sustainability, assessment, pedagogy, inquiry and research. So these kind of big themes are sitting there with ebooks that would be relevant to each of them. And they're available to check in and out in a kind of lending library basis, all online. You can either read them online or you can download them for a period of time. And it does work in exactly the same way. So you might go in and try to access a book and not be able to access it because somebody else has got it out. So there is that frustration that will always exist there. But what we're looking at is, are there ebooks that are being accessed more than others? Do we need to increase the number of copies that we have? So through the feedback that we get and the evaluation data that we have, we'll be able to ascertain, well, actually, we need to buy 10 more copies of John Hattie's Visible Learning, for example, which is quite a popular one, although not the most popular one on our ebook list at the moment.
Are you going to reveal the number one?
I don't actually have the latest data on what number one is. I could quickly go and look and check. But there's what I have been encouraged at is looking at it last week. Of the 28 ebooks, they're all being checked out on a fairly regular basis. None have not been checked out, so that's a good sign. There is a text on there by colleagues actually at Edinburgh University on outdoor learning, and that has been really popular in terms of how many checkouts it's had. So I think that maybe reflects a shift in terms of focus on outdoor learning. So there's one that's proved very popular. As you might imagine, John Hattie's Visible Learning is also a popular text. So there's the access to ebooks. There's also access to over 1,700 education journals, ranging from, you know, some of the very popular common journals to some that are maybe more specialist and particular areas. What we have had so far in the few months that the service has been up and running, we've had a really positive engagement from the profession. We've had something in the region of 10,000 searches for full text articles being conducted, and something in the region of, and my numbers will be slightly off because I don't have the exact data in front of me, something in the region of 4,000 or 5,000 full text articles having been accessed. That's the figures I can remember off the top of my head.
And so where we're at, Zoe, then, is that these are entirely kind of fresh numbers or increases in numbers, because there was nothing before. If you weren't a matriculated in-service teacher, you couldn't get access to this quality
That's
of literature
right.
in many respect without having to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So of course the journals won't be referenced in any way to the standards. I would imagine that would not be possible. Is there any particular articles that are flagged up or?
Yes, well, what we've done, because there is such a plethora of journals out there and you could be interested in a number of different things, and for those who are already very well researched, engaged and research informed. They know what they want to be looking at and how to conduct searches. Other people might be coming to this and saying, I'm not really sure what I want to be looking at or how I should be doing this or what journals of any use if I'm interested in children's literacy. Where do I go for that? Now, that list could be extensive, so we can't provide signposts to everything. But what we have done to support the EBSCO resource is I've set up a research engagement group. And this group is comprised of around about 20 representatives from across the education community. So we have primary, secondary teachers, we have quality improvement service from local authority, university, Education Scotland representatives. So people who are working in various contexts across Scotland in education who are involved in or are supporting or are promoting engagement with research. And what they are doing is helping to point things in the right direction, look at recommended readings and engage people in that way. On the GTC website, we've got a newly developed research area. And on a regular basis, we're updating that and showcasing some research that's being done in Scotland that's relevant, that might be of interest. So from colleagues who are based in universities, either in Scotland or elsewhere. We've had, for example, research done by colleagues at University of Edinburgh on citizenship and transitions. We have a feature that will be coming up soon from colleagues at Strathclyde University looking at literacy and impact of that. So that's something that will be featured in the next few months. We'll also be looking at social justice and poverty and research that's happening in Scotland there. So kind of big themes and highlighting what's happening in Scotland, what's relevant to Scotland and the research there. Also, within the MyGTCS area, we have, against those themes that I was talking about relating to the standards, we've identified different journals that might be relevant and of interest. So if you're interested in assessment or if you're interested in developing curriculum pedagogy, whatever it happens to be, there are a handful of identified journals that might be good starting points. They're certainly not to say these are the only ones or the best ones, but here's a starting point for you. And we've also identified some recommended readings that might be of interest. In the inquiry and research area, for example, there are a number of fairly recent research articles that have been identified as worth a read, or this might be interesting because. And that's an area that we'll continue to develop and evolve, and that's something that the research engagement group are working on as well. So it's just providing some signposts, some hints and tips to get people engaged and start helping with access.
Well, I was going to ask you about, you know, how is this going to develop in the future, but it clearly is developing presently. And maybe just finally then, I know from my experience of setting up one of the EBSCO resources when I was involved with the Association of Chartered Teachers, that if it's the end of a busy school day and you log on to your EBSCO account, in this case through MyGTCS, sometimes you can be a bit kind of bamboozled with what you're faced. You know, you're thinking, I really, you know, I've just had maybe a snippet of in service on cooperative learning, and I really want to find out more before I know whether to, you know, or how to try out, how to embed it into my practice. So, you know, when you're faced with the EBSCO page or what have you, is there any kind of time savers that you could recommend? Maybe just searching in general, you know, what's the best way to find the research article that you want?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's something that we're trying to do as part of the research engagement group, is being very aware that teachers are absolutely interest rich and time poor, and you need that quick access point. So building up useful hints and tips and recommended readings, I think, is one of the best ways to do that. And then developing your skills of searching online. And when you are faced with it and you look at it for the first time, it can seem quite daunting and overwhelming, and there is just so much out there. So careful use of search words and being quite deliberate in the search terms that you use, although sometimes that can yield no search results, so you need to broaden it out again, so not being too specific. But it really, how long is a piece of string, entirely depends on what it is that you're looking at. The EBSCO site itself provides a range of different video tutorials to help people access the search functions and the other functions that are available, how you might go through filtering them. One top tip I would give for accessing EBSCO, when you're doing a search, through the online journals, for example, I would filter my search to bring up full text articles only. And part of the reason for that just now is through the package that we have at the moment, there are a number of journals that have publisher restrictions, and they are embargoed restrictions that you can't access the most recent 12 months articles that are in there, which of course is always the one that you want. That's the frustration, that's the very one that you want, and you don't want to wait another 12 months before you can access it. So sometimes to remove that frustration, if you definitely want an article you want to read now, click the full text only and what's actually available does help to limit some of that. But I would say if there is a journal that you keep coming across that you don't have full text access to and you think this is something that's essential for us, then get in touch and let us know. We have a user feedback survey on the My GTCS page, and the more feedback we get from the profession, the more we can work to adapt and change that and help to ensure that we're providing the most useful resource that is out there.
That's fantastic, Zoe. Thank you so much for giving up your valuable time this evening. You've been listening to Dr. Zoe Robertson of the GTCS. And again, if you've got any questions or comments for Zoe, despite this being a pre-recorded show, then you can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, or you can use the hashtag, which is edutalk. Thanks again, Zoe, and best wishes for the future.
No problem. Thank you, David.